Good afternoon, everybody. This is H.V. Kaltenbaum speaking to you from the Hall of Congress of the State of Argentina in the capital city of Buenos Aires. We are about to bring to you the inaugural session of the Conference of Peace, the Inter-American Conference for Peace. It is going to be a memorable occasion, memorable in a number of ways. In the first place, it will be opened by the President of the United States, who has traveled more than 10,000 miles in order to be present on this particular occasion. Down on the floor before me are seated the delegates representing the 21 nations of the three Americas who are gathered here for this constructive purpose of promoting peace in the New World. The front row, semi-circular, crescent-shaped, small because there are only 10 chairs in that first row, is occupied by 10 foreign ministers, all but three of whom have already occupied their places. They are to be the foreign ministers of Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, Costa Rica, Cuba, Chile, the United States, Honduras, and, well, let's see, who is that other one? Two more, Guatemala, and these foreign ministers receive these seats of honor because they are the only foreign ministers who are represented here and therefore are entitled to special consideration. I see Secretary Hull sitting quietly, his hand resting on by his side in a contemplative mood. Secretary Hull, I know, has been working very hard preparing his first address. We have word, not official, unofficial, that the American delegation is prepared to present two proposals to this conference. One concerning intellectual cooperation, the other concerning neutrality. And the neutrality proposal, neutrality to be provided for America in case of war, is a matter that involves great difficulty and very careful study. What those who follow the proceedings of this conference must remember, and it is something that has been brought home to us many times in the few days that we have been here, is that there are distinctive conflicts of policy and purpose among these various powers. There are conflicts of ideas. There are conflicts with reference to relations with Europe. There are conflicts, traditional to some extent, which still linger in the minds of Latin Americans and which bring up certain antagonism. Fortunately, all America is now at peace. But how to maintain that peace, how to solidify it, how to consolidate it, how to make it sure, how to preserve it in case of hostilities in Europe, that is the problem which confronts this conference. To my right, at the entrance, I see a great crowd of people, evidently unable to find seats, who have crowded in every doorway and who are evidently going to listen to the addresses by the President of the United States and the President of Argentina while standing. As a matter of fact, we are told that many more tickets have been issued to this Congress Hall today than there are seats. However, because of the importance of the occasion, many people will not mind standing. And we are told that neither of the two addresses is going to be long, running probably some 18 or 20 minutes each, depending on the speed with which they are spoken. We naturally have received the text of the addresses in advance and have been told approximately how long they would run. This hall is particularly beautiful in its proportions. It is somewhat old-fashioned in its character. The type of columns, the type of decoration reminds one a little of the Victorian day, but it has dignity, it has stateliness, and because of its semi-circular shape, it ought to be a good hall to speak in from the acoustic standpoint. Practically all the delegates, and at least five semi-circular rows facing toward the central rostrum, are occupied by these delegations. Back of them are a number of additional roles which are occupied by the secretariat that is associated with the conference. As you know, it is now 10 minutes to 6 Buenos Aires time and is 2 hours earlier in New York. It is expected that the President of the United States, together with his host, the President of Argentina, will enter this hall at approximately 6 o'clock. But of course, where there is movement through crowds, where it is not always possible to move exactly on schedule, it may be that the President will enter a minute or two early or a minute or two late. In any case, we will be watching here from this gallery where we are posted and will advise you what the applause that you will hear when they enter really means. I have just come from the American Embassy, where the President is the guest of the American Ambassador to Argentina, and followed the route that he would take, wondering whether the crowd that was so much in evidence and the enthusiasm which was so apparent yesterday would still be in evidence today. But the rain thinned out the crowd, except around the embassy itself and also around the Congress. As we came near the Congress building, we found the crowds increasing everywhere, and police lines had been formed several blocks away in order to prevent access to the Congressional building and to the streets immediately surrounding it by anyone except those who have the definite official authorization. I've been very much impressed with the care that is taken in Argentina to exclude from access to public functions all those who are not definitely entitled to be there. The police are extremely careful, scrutinized. The troop seal, as the French called it, the police card, as we call it in America, with great care. And no one who is not provided with up-to-the-minute credentials, specially issued for this conference, is able to come anywhere near this conference hall where the opening session is taking place. This great Congress hall is reserved only for the plenary sessions, that is, for those that are public and to which the general public has access, the sessions which are likely to be broadcast. The other sessions are to be held at the Foreign Palace under much more restricted conditions and where there will not be the same crowd present. It is for this reason that the pressure was particularly severe to secure tickets for this opening conference. Newspaper men have come here from all over the world. There is very keen interest among the press and public and officials of Europe as to what is going on here. And that aspect of this inter-American conference is one that is going to be constantly kept in mind by all the delegates and by all those who follow its proceedings. For this conference, while it is held in America, for America, also has, as you will undoubtedly catch from the addresses of the two chief executives, also has its implications for the old world. The President gave a press conference this afternoon. He first commented, as was quite natural, on the death of his comrade, his bodyguard, his friend, Gus Genrich. He said that Gus Genrich had been attached to him for a good many years. I see entering the hall, yes, the President of the United States on the arm of his son James, James being clad in his new Lieutenant Colonel of Marines uniform, the Foreign Minister of the Argentine Republic, Saavedra de Lama, just preceded them in. The President now stands facing the audience. All the delegates have risen. All the people in the galleries have risen, and the applause is continuous. President Justo has remained somewhat in the background, and President Roosevelt and his son James out in front are those who are receiving the plaudits of the crowd, together with Ambassador, with Foreign Minister Saavedra de Lama, who stands on the President's right. President Roosevelt is smiling. He has just taken off his glasses. He chats with his son James. Now he's nodding to the ground. He seems thoroughly and completely at ease. The photographers have gathered in front of him, down in the bottom of the footstool, and are flashing away with their pictures.
There are isolated cheers coming from various members. The sound is dying down. Saavedra, the Lama, steps to the restroom.
De la República Argentina, Agustín Justo, y la unanimidad de las delegaciones presentes, declaro abierta la sesión inaugural de la Conferencia Interamericana para la Consolidación de la Paz. Tiene la palabra el señor presidente argentino.
Saavedra da Lama has formally announced the opening of the conference. The president sits down. The president of Argentina is about to speak. He is clad in a military uniform, addresses the president, and now back to the rostrum.
Manos de América, señoras, señores, una vez más, y en circunstancias altamente auspiciosas, los representantes de los pueblos de América, animados por elevados y nobles propósitos de solidaridad, se congregan hoy en esta magna asamblea, realzada por la presencia del mandatario ilustre que la auspició en nombre de la gran nación del norte, que acaba de hacernos objeto de una consagración histórica. Singular honra es para la República Argentina acoger en el seno de su capital a los ilustres representantes de los países hermanos del continente, inspirados por los mismos anhelos y solidarizados por análogos sentimientos. Y lo hizo doblemente, porque la vida de relación de la República estuvo inspirada siempre por severas normas de justicia internacional y por elevados principios de fraternidad humana, de las que nunca se apartó, ni aún en los casos en que la fidelidad a los mismos significó una considerable disminución de su rica heredad territorial. Por eso, los anhelos de paz y concordia fundaban la justicia y hoy expresa al saludar a los representantes de los pueblos hermanos, no son sino los que practicó e hizo efectivo desde que surgió la vida independiente. Eleva y reconforta el espíritu la reunión de esta conferencia bajo tan buenos auspicios, en circunstancias en que a consecuencia de la desorientación general del mundo hunden la desconfianza y el pesimismo, mientras el recelo, la suspicacia, el enfón, el agravio, levantan barreras políticas, económicas, sociales y morales entre los pueblos, retrotrayendo a la humanidad a la época de la incomprensión colectiva y del aislamiento sistemático. En un mundo dividido por el odio y el rencor, que cavan abismos entre los países, contrasta la actitud de las naciones del continente que se congregan en una reunión cordial para coordinar mejor la vida de la comunidad americana dentro del concepto sencillo de la buena vecindad. Puede afirmarse, pues, que si fue una alta inspiración la iniciativa del ilustre presidente de los Estados Unidos de América, que honra a esta asamblea con su presencia, más lo fue aún el sencillo contenido que le dio como norma de sus deliberaciones. Esta iniciativa tan promisoria resulta realzada además, si se tiene en cuenta, y a diferencia de lo que suele ocurrir cuando las rivalidades y los antagonismos inspiran estas reuniones, la conferencia que hoy se inaugura, convocada para beneficio de todos, no está dirigida contra nadie. No podría suponerse, en efecto, que la obra que hoy se inicia respondiera al propósito de desconocer la interdependencia universal que rige la vida económica y política de estos pueblos, ni que la acción a desarrollar pudiera alterar la secular vinculación con las naciones del viejo continente. Esa fue invariablemente la doctrina argentina, propiciada también por uno de los más grandes estadistas de América. En efecto, el barón de Río Branco, al inaugurar la tercera conferencia panamericana de Río Janeiro, refiriéndose a la herencia ingrata de época de recelos y desconfianzas, cuya consecuencia era la suposición de que toda reunión de esta naturaleza estaba siempre dirigida contra otros, agregara: es necesario afirmar expresa e implícitamente todos los intereses legítimos serán aquí respetados, y que al discutir los problemas políticos o comerciales sometidos a esta conferencia no se procederá contra entidad alguna. Y después de expresar que solo se tendría en vista el mayor acercamiento entre los pueblos americanos, con lo que Europa y los restantes países saldrían beneficiados, manifestaba que razones de toda índole aconsejaban a los pueblos del continente estrechar cada vez más las relaciones de amistad e intensificar las comerciales con ese inagotable vivero de hombres y gente prodigiosa de fecundas energías que es Europa. Por eso abogaba que se abriera una Europa cuya cultura modeló el espíritu de estos pueblos, transmitiéndole su ciencia y su arte, el progreso de su técnica y las conquistas de su industria, campos cada vez más vastos para el desarrollo de sus actividades como compensación de su inapreciable concurso moral y material. Este concepto del gran estadista obra un nuevo significado y acentúa el prestigio de estos congresos, cuya obra, sin exclusiones para nadie, alcanzan sus beneficios a todos los pueblos. Por eso, esta iniciativa tan oportuna y de tanta trascendencia para la consolidación de la paz ha llenado de regocijo a todos los pueblos del continente. Ellos están convencidos de que la conferencia que se inaugura bajo tan promisorios auspicios y en presencia de representantes tan ilustres de América congregados en este recinto, no solo será de beneficios incalculables para los estados que integran la comunidad internacional americana, tendrá también proyecciones más vastas y constituirá una esperanza de mejores días para el género humano, angustiado su espíritu por las oscuras e inquietantes perspectivas del presente. Estos países jóvenes no conocen los hondos antagonismos que en el viejo mundo plantean graves problemas y que son factores permanentes de discordia. Y al adoptar ahora la iniciativa de consolidar aún más los vínculos creados por la comunidad de origen, por tradiciones democráticas semejantes y por necesidades espirituales afines, como mostrarán al mundo que los pueblos, lo mismo que los individuos, no están condenados por ley inexorable a vivir en perpetua hostilidad. Pueden formar entre sí comunidades unidas por sentimientos de mutuo bienestar, en que se reconozca cada estado el derecho al pleno desenvolvimiento dentro de una perfecta armonización de los recíprocos intereses. Todo en América favorece la realización de este ideal. El continente es la tierra de la libertad, como lo establecen las constituciones de todos los pueblos de la hermandad americana, y la libertad instituye uno de los fundamentos más sólidos de la paz. En esta América, tierra de promisión, se mantenga siempre ese ambiente de libertad. Bajo la forma democrática, él dignifica al hombre, y bajo el aspecto de libertad de pensamiento y de conciencia, al permitirle practicar su fe y creer y sentir a su arbitrio, le acerca a Dios e infundiéndole optimismo, bondad y confianza, le inmuniza contra el odio cruel y el rencor estéril. Los pueblos americanos, cualquiera que sea su extensión territorial, son naciones con significación propia, que gravitan cada vez más en el concierto de los países, formando centros de civilización y de cultura que pesan o pesarán en el desenvolvimiento general del mundo. Cuando estas jóvenes naciones, pletóricas de recursos naturales, ofrecen a los demás pueblos el ejemplo de una alta y serena comprensión de las recíprocas conveniencias, tal ejemplo puede tener la virtud de corregir muchas orientaciones equivocadas y de serenar los espíritus, llevándolos por el camino de la reflexión y la cordura. Por eso las decisiones que se adopten en esta conferencia contribuirán seguramente al mejoramiento de las condiciones angustiosas en que se debate el mundo. Pero aun cuando no fuera así, ello no debe desalentar. No olvidemos que las más grandes conquistas de la humanidad fueron resultado de esfuerzos infinitos y que así como nada se pierde en el mundo material, tampoco se perderán estos sueños generosos que honran al espíritu humano. Por lo demás, como lo enseña la experiencia, si el sueño de ayer es la verdad de hoy, confiemos en que el sueño de hoy será la hermosa realidad de mañana. No parece insistir que en la realización de estos nobles propósitos, el modo alguno se ha pensado crear agrupaciones continentales antagónicas. Solo se anhela encontrar para la solución pacífica de los conflictos internacionales fórmulas más perfectas que puedan merecer la adhesión de todos los países. Como lo ha expresado el excelentísimo señor presidente Roosevelt en la circunscrita invitación a esta conferencia, es de alta necesidad estudiar la forma de reforzar desde las Américas la acción pacifista que desarrolla la sociedad de las naciones, organismo al que pertenece la gran mayoría de los países aquí representados. Y el día en que se logre coordinar los instrumentos de origen americano con el pacto de la sociedad de las naciones y demás tratados que tienden a la consagración del derecho, de la justicia, de la equidad y de la moral en las relaciones entre los estados, se habrá dado un paso decisivo en el camino de la pacificación universal. Séame permitido ahora dirigirme desde esta tribuna a mi pueblo, que me honró confiándome la dirección de sus destinos, y decirle bien alto que estamos frente a la raya de la realización de los ideales a que aspiró desde los comienzos de nuestra emancipación. Que se ha cumplido en el hilo de nuestros padres la aspiración suprema de aquellos que nos dieron patria y libertad. Decirle que mi gobierno no ha creado nada nuevo en materia de política internacional, pero se ha esforzado por continuar el camino caloneado por nuestros grandes hombres desde los albores de la nacionalidad. Y recordarle al propio tiempo que no hay en la vida de los pueblos un solo acontecimiento que no sea el resultado necesario de grandes y lentas combinaciones que es imposible frustrar cuando ha llegado el momento de su realización. Coincidente en un todo con la iniciativa del ilustre presidente Roosevelt, creo que el ambiente está preparado para aquella triunfo. Por eso tengo absoluta fe en los resultados de esta conferencia. Tengo fe en esta reunión de amigos. Han de ser muy pocos los sacrificios, porque en ella la buena voluntad, pero los beneficios resultarán, a no dudarlo, de considerable valor. En 1817, cuando el Congreso General Constituyente de las Provincias Unidas del Río de la Plata comunicaba a las naciones del mundo los motivos que tuvo este país para declarar su independencia, decía, y al intento de manifestar las razones que nos han movido para tomar este partido, tenemos el honor de expresar nuestra intención de vivir en paz con todas. A los 120 años de manifestar esa intención, en mi carácter de presidente de los argentinos, me cabe la honra de recordar que mi país, haciendo honor al solemne voto de los creadores de nuestra nacionalidad, ha cumplido su mandato, esforzándose siempre por vivir, dejar vivir y ayudar a vivir en paz a todos los pueblos. Con esta convicción que traduce el íntimo sentir del pueblo argentino, saludo a los ilustres representantes de los pueblos hermanos de América y declaro inauguradas las deliberaciones de esta conferencia. Al hacerlo, invocando la protección de Dios, expreso mis votos porque sus resultados, que para bien del continente serán dignos de los anhelos del preclaro estadista que lo auspició, redunden también en beneficio de la humanidad, cuyo espíritu se sobrecoge ante la magnitud de las catástrofes que la amenazan en este instante trágico de su vida.
President Justo, President of the Argentine Republic, has declared the conference open, and the applause of the Assembly greets the address which he has just concluded, the first one of the Inter-American Conference for Peace.
Pedro Lamas now comes once more to the speaker's stand, and he will introduce the President of the United States.
President Rousseau, members of the American family of nations, my friends, on the happy occasion of the convening of this conference, I address you thus, because members of a family need no introduction or formalities when, in pursuance of excellent custom, they meet together for their common good. As a family, we appreciate the hospitality of our host, President Justo, and the government and the people of Argentina. And all of us are happy that to our friend, Dr. Saavedra Lamas, has come the well-deserved award of the Nobel Prize for great service in the cause of world peace. Years ago, the American family met in nearby Montevideo, the great capital of the Republic of Uruguay. They were dark days, a shattering depression unparalleled in its intensity held us with the rest of the world in its grip. And on our own continent, a tragic war was raging between two of our sister republics. And yet at that conference, there was born not only hope for our common future, but a greater measure of mutual trust between the American democracies than had ever existed before. In this Western Hemisphere, the night of fear has been dispelled. Many of the intolerable burdens of economic depression have been lightened, and due in no small part to our common effort, every nation of this hemisphere is today at peace with its neighbor. This is no conference to form alliances, to divide the spoils of war, to partition countries, to deal with human beings as though they were pawns in a game of chance. Our purpose, under happy auspices, is to secure the continuance of the blessings of peace. 3 years ago, recognizing that a crisis was being thrust upon the new world, with splendid unanimity, our 21 republics set an example to the whole world
by proclaiming a new spirit, a new day in the affairs of this hemisphere. And while the succeeding period has justified in full measure all that was said and done at Montevideo, it has unfortunately emphasized the seriousness of threats to peace among other nations. Events elsewhere have served only to strengthen our horror of war and all that war means. The men and women and children of the Americas know that welfare in this day and age, warfare means today more than mere clash of armies. They see the destruction of cities and of farms. They foresee that children and grandchildren, if they survive, will stagger for long years, not only under the burden of poverty, but also amid the threat of broken society and the destruction of constitutional government. And I am profoundly convinced that the plain people, everywhere in the civilized world, not only here in the Americas, but everywhere else, wish to live in peace one with another. And still, leaders and governments resort to war. Truly, it's the genius of mankind that has invented the weapons of death cannot discover the means of preserving peace. Civilization as we know it lives in an evil day. But we cannot now, especially in view of our common purpose, accept any defeatist attitude. We have learned by hard experience that peace is not to be had for the mere asking, that peace, like other great privileges, can be obtained only by hard and consistent effort. And so we are here to dedicate ourselves and our countries to that work. You who assemble today carry with you in your deliberations the hopes of millions of human beings in other less fortunate lands. Beyond the ocean, we see continents rent asunder by old hatred and new fanaticism. We hear the demand that injustice and inequality be corrected by resorting to the sword and not by resorting to reason and peaceful justice. We hear the cry that new markets can be achieved only through conquest. We read that the sanctity of treaties between nations is disregarded. We know, too, that vast armaments are rising on every side, and that the work of creating them employs men and women by the millions. It is natural, however, for us to conclude that such employment is false employment, that it builds no permanent structure, creates no consumer's goods for the maintenance of a lasting prosperity. We know that nations guilty of these follies inevitably face the day either when their weapons of destruction must be used against their neighbors, or when an unsound economy, like a house of cards, will fall apart. In either case, even though the Americas become involved in no war, we must suffer too. The madness of a great war in other parts of the world would affect us and threaten our good in 100 ways. And the economic collapse of any nation or nations must of necessity harm our own prosperity. Can we, the Republic of the New World, help the old world to avert the catastrophe that impends? Yes, I am confident that we can.
First,
It is our duty by every honorable means to prevent any future war among ourselves. The best this can best be done through the strengthening of the processes of constitutional democratic government. To make these processes conform to the modern need for unity and efficiency, and at the same time preserve the individual liberties of our citizens. By so doing, the people of all nations, unlike the people of many nations who live under other forms of government, can and will insist on their intention to live in peace. Thus will democratic government be justified throughout the world. In this determination to live at peace among ourselves, we in the Americas make it at the same time clear that we stand shoulder to shoulder in our final determination that others, though driven by war, madness, or land hunger, might seek to commit acts of aggression against us, will find a hemisphere fully prepared to consult together for our mutual safety and our mutual good. And I repeat what I said in speaking before the Congress and the Supreme Court of Brazil. Each one of us has learned the glories of independence. Let each one of us learn the glories of interdependence. Secondly, and in addition to the perfecting of the mechanisms of peace, we can strive even more strongly than in the past to prevent the creation of those conditions which give rise to war. Lack of social or political justice within the borders of any nation is always cause for concern. Through democratic processes, we can strive to achieve for the America the highest possible standard of living conditions for all our people. Men and women blessed with political freedom, willing to work, able to find work, rich enough to maintain their families and to educate their children, contented with their lot in life, and on terms of friendship with their neighbors. They will defend themselves to the utmost, but will never consent to take up arms for a war of conquest. And interwoven with these problems is the further self-evident fact that the welfare and the prosperity of each of our nations depends in large part on the benefits derived from commerce among ourselves and with other nations. For our present civilization rests on the basis of an international exchange of commodities. Every nation of the world has felt the evil effects of recent efforts to erect trade barriers of a renowned kind. Every individual citizen has suffered from them. And it is no accident that the nations of the world that have carried this process furthest are those which proclaim most loudly that they require war as an instrument of their policy. It is no accident that attempts to be self-sufficient have led to falling standards for their people and to ever-increasing loss of the democratic ideals in a mad race to pile armament upon armament. And it is no accident that because of these suicidal policies and the suffering attending them, many of their people have come unfortunately to believe with despair that the price of war seems less than the price of peace. This state of affairs, my friends, we must refuse to accept. with every instinct of defense, with every exhortation of enthusiastic hope, with every use of mind and skill. I cannot refrain here from reiterating my gratification that in this, as in so many other achievements, the American republics have given a salutary example to the world. The resolution adopted at the Inter-American Conference at Montevideo, endorsing the principles of liberal trade policy, has shone forth like a beacon in the storm of economic madness which has been sweeping over the entire world during these later years. True, if the principles there embodied find still wider application in your deliberations, it will be a notable contribution to the cause of peace. For my own part, I have done all in my power to sustain the consistent efforts of my Secretary of State in negotiating agreements for reciprocal trade, and even though the individual results may seem small, the total of them is significant. These policies in recent weeks have received the approval of the people of the United States. And they have, I am sure, the sympathy of the other nations here assembled. There are many other causes for war, among them long festering feuds, unsettled frontiers, territorial rivalries, but these forces of danger which still exist in the Americas, I am thankful to say, are not only few in number, but already on the way to peaceful adjudication. While the settlement of such controversies may necessarily involve adjustments at home or in our relations with our neighbors, which may appear to involve material sacrifice, let no man or woman forget that there is no profit in war. Yes, sacrifices in the cause of peace are infinitesimal compared with the holocaust of war. Peace comes from the spirit and must be grounded in faith. In seeking peace, perhaps we can best begin by proudly affirming the faith of the America, the faith in freedom and its fulfillment, which has proved a mighty fortress beyond reach of successful attack in half the world. That faith arises from a common hope and a common design given us by our fathers in differing form, but with a single aim, freedom and security of the individual, which has become the foundation of our peace. If then, by making war in our midst impossible, and if within ourselves and among ourselves we can give greater freedom and fulfillment to the individual lives of our citizens, the democratic form of representative government will have justified the high hopes of the liberating father. Democracy is still the hope of the world. In our generation can continue its successful application in the Americas, it will spread and supersede other methods by which men are governed and which seem to most of us to run counter to our ideas of human liberty and human progress. centuries of history. Three centuries sowed the seed which grew into our nation. The fourth century saw those nations become equal and free and brought us to a common system of constitutional government. The fifth century is giving to us a common meeting ground of mutual help and understanding. Our hemisphere has at last come of age. We are here assembled to show its unity to the world. We took from our ancestors a great dream. We here offer it back as a great unified reality. And finally, in expressing our faith of the Western world, let us affirm that we maintain and defend the democratic form of constitutional representative government. That through such government, we can more greatly provide a wider distribution of culture, of education, of thought, and of free expression. That through it we can obtain a greater security of life for our citizens and a more equal opportunity for them to prosper. That through it we can best foster commerce and the exchange of art and science between nations. That through it we can avoid the rivalry of armaments, avert hatred, and encourage goodwill and true justice. And that through it we can offer hope of peace and a more abundant life to the people of the whole world. But this faith of the Western world, will not be complete if we fail to affirm our faith in God. In the whole history of mankind, far back into the dim past, before man knew how to record thoughts or events, the human race has been distinguished from other forms of life by the existence, the fact of religion. Periodic attempts to deny God have always and will always come to naught. In the Constitution and in the practice of our nation is the right of freedom of religion. But this ideal, these words presuppose a belief and a trust in God. The faith of the Americas, therefore, lies in the spirit, the system, the sisterhood of the Americas is impregnable so long as her nation maintains that spirit. In that faith and spirit, we will have peace over the Western world. In that faith and spirit, we will all watch and guard our hemisphere. In that faith and spirit, may we also, with God's help, offer hope to our brethren overseas.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States speaking at the opening ceremony of the Inter-American Conference for the Maintenance of Peace. regarding him enthusiastically. A wave in exchange, and now he's shaking hands with his colleague, the President of Argentina, General Agustin P. Russo, whose address preceded that of the President of the United States. Both presidents turn now to make their way from the podium. The President pauses a moment to shake hands with Dr. Carlos De Pedro Lamas, Foreign Minister of the Argentine Republic, who has just now declared the meeting adjourned. President bowing and now making his way out the rear door, leaving the tribune here in the Chamber of Deputies of the National Congress of Argentina. The delegates, too, are starting to make their way from the chamber now. As the president spoke, Dr. Lamas, who will be president general of the conference, Dr. Felipe Espiel, ambassador from the Argentine to the United States, who will be secretary general of the conference, and the president of Argentina remain standing throughout his address. And now for an English translation of excerpt of President Russo's talk, which was delivered in Spanish, we turn the microphone over to Edward Tomlinson.
Your Excellency, President of the United States, Brothers of America, ladies and gentlemen. Once more and under highly auspicious circumstances, the representatives of the countries of America, animated by lofty and noble purposes of solidarity, gather today in this great assembly, heightened by the presence of the illustrious mandatory who engendered it. In name of the great nation of the North, which lately made him the object of a historical consecration, it is an extraordinary honor for the Argentine Republic to receive in its capital the illustrious representatives of the sister countries of the continent, inspired by the same eagerness and sentiments of solidarity. And the honor is so much higher in its international relations because the Argentine Republic always has been inspired by severe standards of international law and by high principles of human brotherhood from which it never strayed. Not even in those cases where its faithful adherence to these sentiments means a considerable decrease of its territorial heritage. Therefore, the wishes for peace and harmony based on justice, which it declares today in its greetings to the representatives of the sister countries, are but the same practice and carried out from time to time, from the time it burst forth into an independent life. This initiative, which is so opportune and transcendental for the maintenance of peace, has filled with joy all the peoples of the continent. They are convinced that the conference to be open today, under such promising auspices and in the presence of such illustrious representatives of America gathered in this hall, not only will be of incalculable benefit for the states that form the international and American community, it will also have more far-reaching effects and will constitute a hope for better days for mankind whose mind is tortured by the dark and disturbing outlook of the recent moment. The American peoples, no matter what their territorial extension, are nations with a signification of their own, who gravitate more and more in the concert of those countries that form centers of civilization and culture that make themselves felt or shall do so in the general development of the world. When these young nations, full of natural resources, offer to the other peoples an example of a high and serene comprehension of the mutual conveniences, such an example might have the virtue of correcting many erroneous orientations and of pacifying the minds by showing them the road of reflection and tolerance. For that reason, the decisions to be adopted in this conference will certainly contribute to the betterment of the anxious conditions in which the world is moving. In complete harmony with the initiative of the illustrious President Roosevelt, I believe that the atmosphere is prepared for its triumph. Therefore, I have absolute confidence as to the results of this conference. That is to say, I have faith in this meeting of friends. There ought to be very few sacrifices because there reigns goodwill. But the benefits that will result, there is no doubt, will be considerably valuable. With this conviction, which interprets the intimate feelings of the Argentine people, I salute the distinguished representatives of the sister countries of America and declare open the deliberations of this conference. In doing so, I invoke the protection of the Lord, I wish to express my vote for the results of the conference, which, to the good of the continent, will be worthy of the ideals of the eminent statesmen who convened it. I hope they will also turn out beneficial to humanity, whose spirit it is overcome by the magnitude of the catastrophes which are threatening it in this tragical moment of its existence.
And with the reading of an English translation of excerpts of President Housseau's address, we bring to a conclusion our broadcast of this opening extraordinary session of the Inter-American Conference for the Maintenance of Peace. This broadcast featuring the addresses of the President of the United States and the President of the Argentine Republic reach you this afternoon from the Chamber of Deputies in the National Congress or Legislative Palace in Buenos Aires, the capital of Argentina. This is Carlton Smith speaking and returning you to New York.
We are back in America in the Radio City studios of the National Broadcasting Company. Once more, we've returned from Buenos Aires, Argentina, where it was our pleasure today to bring to you the inaugural ceremonies opening the Inter-American Conference for the Maintenance of Peace. In our New York studios, Joseph Littow and the orchestra salute all our friends with the familiar and stirring Pan-Americana Overture of Victor Herbert.